Hey everybody, Shane Presley here to tell you about my friend's music record shop. Check him out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. Head down there and visit them and pick up some new records. They always new vinyl in every Friday. Lots of great used vinyl, CDs, tapes, and a fantastic local selection. Get on, take a look. Pick up some new music. They do a lot of live in stores on Saturdays and all kinds of just fun stuff. So get out, support your local record store, find them online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
This is Nick Vatterott. Listen to the Rock Paper Podcast before it listens to you. Brought to you by the NSA.
Yeah. This is Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, hanging out with Nick Vatterott.
That's right, Nick Vatterott. You said it right.
Yeah.
Nick Vatterott. Well, second appearance.
Yeah, big, you know, the fans were demanding your return and...
More Vatterott!
I get emails constantly.
Most are from me.
Yeah.
Mostly it's me emailing you going, when am I going to be back on? I have a lot of different made-up email accounts.
All right.
Yeah. You know what one of my favorite things is? On Twitter, when people are mean to me,
yeah.
People go, well, Nick, how do you deal with all the hate that you get on the internet? Which is a lot. It's mostly hate. And the way I deal with it is I'm a mature adult about it, you know? I block them. And then from one of my 17 made-up Twitter accounts, I berate them in the most vulgar fashion possible.
Right.
And that's a real thing that I do.
What any reasonable adult would do.
Right. You know, I'm mature. Just... I did Red Eye, so I've been doing this show Red Eye on Fox News recently.
Yeah.
Belly of the Beast, that's right. Fox News, folks, you're home for comedy! So they have a show called Red Eye with Tom Shalhoub. Tom Shalhoub is great. I actually do like everybody over there. They're very nice. I don't know why. I love what it sounds like I was. Well, Fox News is so like, you know, Fox News can make you just angry listening to it. But everyone involved in Red Eye is I like them. I think they're awesome. They let you sort of voice an opinion that is not generally in line with the rest of the programming, you know, which is great. But the downside of it is that, you know, after I do it, I will get just this barrage of hate from people who watch Fox News. I think I made fun of Trump last time I was on there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, yeah, you know, because he's just... He's just nothing but – he's doing nothing but giving you stuff to make fun of, you know? And then all these people are berating me for, you know. So I just block them and just go into one of my other Twitter accounts and just do whatever I can to make them – because to me, I think it's funny It's what I think is funny is blocking somebody and then attacking them from some other fake account,
right.
And just say nothing but stuff to try to get under their skin, because it's so infuriating when someone yells at you and you can't yell back at them. So I don't check any of the other accounts or anything. I log into it every once in a while. I'll just barrage of just to get under their skin,
yeah.
Wash my hands of it and walk away. Just the idea that there's some guy out there who's just like, dang it, this guy just screamed at me, and yeah. I can't yell back at him. You don't want to get involved in Twitter exchanges, you know.
Yeah. I've never gotten any of that.
You're a likable guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, thank you.
There's nobody who I don't know anyone who's shouting hate at you. Why would they do that? You don't want to, but don't you ever go on Facebook? Do you ever do a Facebook post and get into it with somebody on Facebook?
Not really. I don't know. I have a hard time even getting anybody to engage socially with my pages at all. So it's like,
but I mean, I'm talking like you're some relative of yours, you know, This is what happens on Facebook. Some friend or relative or somebody posts something, let's say Barack Obama is a Muslim.
Yeah.
They post that. And you want to I'm better about it now, you know? Somebody wrote something. So this is something that I've talked about before. Somebody wrote, I think all Muslim Americans need to go back. Somebody posted I think Obama is a Muslim thing on Facebook. And somebody commented, I think all Muslim Americans need to go back. And then it's not like that wasn't an attack at me, but yeah. I still wanted to engage with them, and I just was like, really, you want to go down and tell Muhammad Ali that he needs to go back to Louisville, I think is where he's from, you know, with all the other Muslim Americans from Louisville. What are you talking about? You know, that's what you've never gotten into anything like that where someone's posted some racist stuff on Facebook and you've wanted to
don't know. Usually I end up blocking them or unfriending them if that's something just dumb like that, but I'm fine with disagreeing with people's political stance and stuff.
Sure.
That's what the beauty of being, you know, American here.
We say that. Yeah. Do we mean it?
but you know, I'm not. I'm just not very argumentative and stuff.
You're a better person than I am. I get infuriated when somebody posted with the gay marriage thing, and they were like, it says in the Bible that being gay is a sin, and you're just like, who are you?
Yeah,
how are we friends on Facebook? Yeah. You know,
that's usually the case. Like, I don't need that kind of negativity in my life, so I just end up deleting them. And
yeah, that's what I do now.
Yeah,
I'm better about it now. All Facebook is just me just like trying. My hands start shaking, and my mind says, "Don't do it, Nick. Yeah. Don't engage in this thing." I've lost hours of my life. Yeah. Like, I get up in the morning, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna write a screenplay and the great Canadian novel and all this stuff. And then I see some Facebook post, and then I spend an hour honing and crafting this response to it. I'm like, what am I doing?
Right. And the thing is when even do that, you try to educate them on something.
Right.
And it does no good. They're never going to change their stance. They're, you're never going to be able to sway them on their opinion. They're stuck. This is how I feel.
Right.
And so that's where I get into the point where it's not even worth wasting my time. But
it doesn't matter. Somebody could, they could say Obama is a Muslim born in Kenya. And then you could show them video of Obama being born, you know, in America, and they'd still be like, nah.
Yeah.
That's what I've decided.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, I have footage of Obama being born in America. I'm releasing it after his presidency. Why I've been sitting on it for so long, I don't know. How I got it, I can't tell.
Yeah. If I tell you, I have to kill you.
I'll just say I have a time machine that I use for real stupid reasons. Just videotaping births of famous people that you can't even tell who they are when they're being born. But if you look at this baby, it looks like a baby Obama.
Yeah.
Little Obama baby. Thanks a lot, Obama. Thanks a lot, baby Obama. There's a dimension, because there's like so many dimensions out there, and there's a different dimension, and in every dimension is a different possibility, or there's like one little thing different from ours. And there, one, Barack Obama's a baby, and he's running the country.
Yeah.
And there's people going, "Thanks a lot, baby Obama," as a thing that people, as a meme in that dimension. Right. We talk mostly about multi-universe, right?
Yeah.
And
sure.
Okay, great. Just want to make sure I'm on board.
Yeah. There was some cartoon, little cartoon drawing on Facebook the other day, and it was said there was a guy with a gun or something, and then it was like Obama shows up, and he's like, "I'm going to take your guns." And he's like, "What?" And he's like, and Obama's like, "Yeah, and replace them with katanas." And he gives him a sword or something like
Jeez.
That. And then the guy's like, "Whoa, thanks a lot, Obama." And then Obama like kind of looks like sad. And he goes, "Actually, that was serious that time," or something like, you know, whatever. It wasn't sarcasm this time, or something like that.
Man,
it made me laugh pretty hard, though.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I could go for a katana right now.
Katana, if we lived in a katana-loving country, yeah. I would love that.
Yeah.
I think that is the thing I hate the most about guns, you know, is that I get it. People want to have guns, they can have them. I understand that. I get it. Second Amendment, I get it. I understand it. I just think it is I just wished we were in the dimension where guns weren't ever invented and just katanas. Like that was the one with that Leonardo had, right?
Yeah.
The Leonardo turtle.
I think so.
He had two katana blades, is that right? He had some sort of sword.
Yeah. And then Raphael had the
size,
and Michelangelo had the
nunchucks.
Yep.
Now, is it nunchucks or nunchaku?
I say nunchucks.
I can't tell if it's nunchucks. Someone once said it was nunchaku, and that we're Americanizing it.
Yeah. And then you got Donatello with the bow staff or whatever,
yeah,
or something.
The weakest of all. What piece of broom handle is what he's got. And then the other guy's got size. Just a very inefficient weapon, I feel. Nunchucks aren't the best either. Really, they should just all have swords.
Right.
Swords are the best. Katanas are the best. If we lived in a society where... Because, like, the thing with guns, people think having guns is they're tough. But really, like, there's nothing tough about shooting somebody. If you want to hurt somebody, you want to kill somebody, do it with your bare hands like a man, you know? Like, choke, or at least swords, there's some sort of hand-to-hand combat. Like, killing people with a gun is such, like, a just a fucking wussy way to kill somebody. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know? Swords. Tap people with swords.
Sure.
You know? Give them a fighting chance. Be a man about it, you know?
Well, the same thing in hunting for sport and stuff. Like,
right.
With deer hunting, that bow and arrow is a much more, you know, there's some skill involved.
Exactly.
Instead of shooting you with a rifle from...
Just shooting with a rifle. I get it. You want your dumb gun and you want to go shoot deer because you're just whatever. Because that's a moving target. You want to hunt? Great. That's your thing. You know, I'm into pinball. You know what? Maybe people don't like. People think my pinball thing is stupid. I'm not offended by it.
Yeah.
I think it's also fun that I don't understand too. If I think hunting is dumb, people get so offended by that. I think it's, again, I'm not liberal or conservative. I'm a comedian, you know, and it kills me that, like, there's this whole, like, conservatives think liberals are so easily offended and too PC, you know, like conservatives, again, it's a blanketed generalization. I get it. But I'm just saying there is a lot of this sentiment from the right towards the left that they think they're too PC. Oh, the left is so politically correct. I can't make a joke about anything and they get offended. You know, I can't make a joke about gays, or I can't make a joke about precious Muslims, or I can't make a joke about, you know, whatever it is. You know, I can't make a joke about Mexicans. They get all PC. I can't make a joke about women. They get all PC. They get so offended. It's just a joke. But you make one joke about Christians or the NRA and they lose their fucking mind. They just lose it, you know? You get me? You make a joke about hunting. That's my right to be a judge. I can be a hunter if I want. Don't make fun of hunting. That's my Second Amendment making fun of my hunting ability and my that's my past. That's a national pastime is going to make it fun. I was like, it's a joke, man. Chill out. You know, you want to make fun of my pinball? Great. Make fun of my pinball. I know pinball's stupid. All right, I get that it's stupid. You want to make fun of it and say it's the stupidest, dumbest thing? I'm fine with that. I still like it. It's my thing. I'm not gonna think different of you. But if I make fun of hunting, people just get so offended by it. Hey, you know, we use some, you know, like honey. You know, like it's what I do. It's my life. You know, every weekend. You know, it's so I don't have to be around my wife. You know, so I can go hunting every weekend and just slaughter just innocent, unarmed animals. I can make fun of hunting. Chill out. Take a joke.
I get my 30-pack of Bush camo cans.
I love those cans.
Go out into the woods.
Those camo cans are amazing.
Yeah.
They get the little orange around the lettering. So funny.
Oh, man. You know what? This is probably the most political the show's gotten.
Really? Already?
Yeah.
I got tons of political stuff.
Yeah.
Can I tell you another political thing?
Sure.
This is a big political thing I have right now.
Whatever you want
to
say.
Do you know in superhero movies, there's always like a guy... this is what I was thinking about this past week. In superhero movies... By the way, it's not political. I'm saying it shouldn't be political. Yeah. And we should be able to make fun of everything, you know? But the one thing I... this is the one thing that... maybe this is a little political. In superhero movies... Okay, there's always that one guy who hates the good guys because they're mutants, you know.
Right.
And then people are like, we gotta get rid of the mutants, you know. And then and they're like, why get rid of the mutants? Because some of the worst people in the world are mutants.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, but those are villains, you know. And it's like, yeah, but I can't tell the difference between which mutants are good or which mutants are bad. You know, we gotta get rid of all the mutants because you can't trust any of the mutants. That guy's always the biggest jerk of the movie, right?
Yeah.
That's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. That's exactly... And it kills me that all these people are voting for the worst person in every superhero movie.
All right.
And he's doing exactly that, you know? He's doing exactly, like, what the lame guy in superhero movies...
Sure.
And by the way that that's going right now, if we continue to go down the typical plot line of that character... He will eventually be saved by a flying Muslim Mexican at some point.
All right.
I think he'll be like, it'll have to be like, oh, I get it now. I'm super racist. I should stop doing that. It kills me the people that love Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Do you like him?
I honestly haven't paid attention to any of this stuff. Like I enjoyed him when he was on Celebrity Apprentice.
When you saw Celebrity Apprentice, you weren't like, this guy needs to be our president.
Yeah, no, that never crossed my mind. No, but so I don't know. I do find it funny, though, like how even like The Simpsons predicted Trump running for president. Kind of
really?
Some episode of what and how there was and then just stuff like... like Idiocracy with like President Camacho and all this stuff.
Right.
Like we're getting closer and closer to that kind of becoming a reality. Like, I don't know if it's exactly Trump, but I feel like it just feels like how we're getting the.
I mean, you know, you got Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
You got Jesse Ventura, which I love. Two people from Predator became governors.
Right.
It's amazing. I'd have to fact check this, but some people have said that Roseanne came in like fourth in the last election.
Oh, yeah.
Because she ran under some Green Party, and she took up, and maybe she was like fourth in, I don't know, in just California or something like that. Yeah. But she had like a alarming amount of votes for being Roseanne running for.
Sure.
And I can't remember exactly. I'd have to fact check that. But like, the one thing about Trump though, you know, I will say that like I have heard a couple things that Trump has said that I was like, now that's a little more of a rational thing to say, you know?
Yeah.
And if he wasn't just saying so many offensive, outlandish things, you know, like we might give him a little more. We might get the legitimate things that he said some more attention, you know?
Sure.
But just when someone is like, if you have a buddy that's like super racist, it kind of, even if he's like awesome at like, let's say, I don't know, playing board games, you kind of don't want to play with board games with them just because he's so racist, you know? It takes away from him as a person. It taints every aspect and part of him, you know? But the one thing about them is I think people are tired of politicians. So you're right that we might just want to think outside the box and get a non-politician.
Sure. I think I think anything more than anything, really, like when people going in and you, it's the celebrity factor, you know, the fact that like Trump is a name and a face that people have seen, and it's regardless, like they might not even know his stance on issues, but they're like, oh, I know this guy. So it's like, it's that kind of thing too.
Yeah. We know he's not being, well, I mean, it's debatable, but I mean, I'll say something nice about Trump. I'll say, I don't see him being as influenced by, billionaires as other politicians that desperately need the money, I don't think, the Koch brothers have Trump under their thumb, or I don't see Trump being as influenced by the NRA as, and he's already said things that shows that he's not as influenced as the NRA lobbyists, that do like back a lot of these other politicians and stuff. The celebrity has it. We just love celebrities so much, man. Oh, yeah. We like a famous guy. Sure. Rubio, we're like, all right, who is this guy? What's his deal? I'm learning about him. Right now you got like, what is it? There's like 45 different Republican candidates right now. And there's just too many to try to figure out each one, who they are, what their deal is. But Trump, we know a lot about him from the way Phil Hartman portrayed him back in the 90s. Yeah. And so we like familiarity.
What, Daryl Hammond? And then he did Trump for a long time too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He Daryl Hammond redid Trump for the one of the recent SNLs where they did a political.
Oh, really?
One of the cold openings. They did they had all the guys out there for like the Republican Party.
I think I did see that. I think I didn't. I think I didn't realize that was Hammond.
Yeah,
he's there anyway though, because isn't he doing?
He's now the voiceover. Yeah,
that's so awesome.
After Pardo died.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he doing a Pardo impression?
No, I mean it's him. But I mean he sort of reads it in that same tone and
stuff. Musical guest, yeah. Bobcat Pudding.
Right. But no, I think it's some kind of trick in your brain. Like just hearing those names and stuff, like you're automatically, start hearing it as Pardo saying it, no matter who's
right,
it,
right.
It's all going to kind of come out sounding that way regardless and stuff. So, I mean, you heard him do that opening for 40
so long,
years,
right? So it is one of those voices that you like. I have a sound image in an audio image in my brain of how he sounds, but it's a hyperbolic version of him.
Yeah.
So when I watch it, it's not as Pardo as my brain remembers it is. But in my brain, it's like, and featuring the Time musical guest, the Time. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Time?
Oh, yeah.
What was their song?
Jungle Love.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
How's Jungle Love go?
More Stay in the Time. My Jungle Love. Oh-wee, oh-wee.
That's the...
Know ya.
Jungle Love. Oh!
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow. The Time.
Yeah. I mean, they had a bit of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. They were in that movie.
The Time did?
Yeah. There was a... there was a scene... There was a scene, Jay and Silent Bob are outside the gas station, and he says to him, Jay's saying something about, yeah, me and Tubby, here we mod our whole lives around that shit, more Stay in Jerome or something, and then he goes into that whole Jungle Love, I think I want to know you, yeah. And then at the end of the movie, they throw like a big party, and it's at a Time concert, so yeah.
I forgot that. They're such an obscure band, sort of. Yeah. I guess to me, I guess they're not obscure if you're familiar with them as much. I love that classic movie trope of ending with a concert.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? Is it Rat Race, where they ended a Smash Mouth concert?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know. I'm sure I have seen it.
It's so funny, ending in a big concert.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a movie where they all ended a big concert.
Yeah.
Just because it seems to be...
Because if you
want... People want familiarity, and that's what people... I'll give it to them.
Yeah.
As a comedian, you want to be familiar. Do you think about that in comedy at all? Do you find... some people ask me, or we talk about, like, what's the difference between, like... What is alt comedy?
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like... Like, what would you, if you define alt comedy, what would you say it is?
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Just,
I'm not really sure how to define, but like.
I don't know if it has a definition. Yeah, it's different to people. I think that's sort of the problem with alt comedy, because it means different.
Yeah, I think it's just something out of the norm. Like, you're going to get guys that are a little more, not just set up punchlines and stuff. You get a lot of different things involved. You get a little more storytelling in there. You get sketch and improv stuff too. And
yeah.
I just feel like so many people have like an image of what a stand-up comedian is supposed to be. You know, like you got your... Seinfeld and even Foxworthy and all these guys that were huge, but there's so many guys that were influenced by that to get started, but they're in a totally different thing now.
Right.
And it's hard to put them all in the same kind of genre because
they're
all doing very different stuff in comedy. So I don't know. Yeah, it's difficult to exactly put a definition on it, but
I think a lot of people have a different idea of what alternative comedy is.
Yeah.
But I've sort of realized that if you go to like an alternative comedy show, then it's often a lot of comics that you would see that do a lot of comedy clubs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're doing the same act at the alternative comedy club or the alternative comedy show that they would do in a mainstream club, you know? So then like, well, you know, what's the big difference between? But I do think like when you do a club or you do an alt room, I feel like while oftentimes I feel like the audience, I think the biggest difference between an alt room and in a comedy club is the expectation of the audience.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like. There's while you got some comics that would do different things in the alt room that they couldn't do in a club, I feel like familiarity is like the biggest difference between alt and comedy clubs. Like when a comedy club audience goes to a comedy club, they want familiarity. They want to see, they want jokes that sound like jokes they've heard before.
Oh yeah.
They want comedians that feel like comedians they've seen before. They want the subject matter to be stuff that's familiar to them, and I feel like in an alternative room, the audience is sort of there's probably, and again, this is a generalization, but I think almost like the less familiar, the better, you know.
Sure.
Like they like the idea of something that's not familiar, you know. In fact, if something does feel familiar, that's when it starts to feel hack or like, oh, this is too close to something I've already seen, and it doesn't get as much of the response, you know.
Sure.
I think it's a weird difference between the two, the expectation of what an audience wants when they go to two different shows.
I saw Sean Patton a while back at Foam here in St. Louis.
Very funny comedian.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Great
yeah.
storyteller.
Yeah. So he saw him there for the first time, and I was very excited, especially one of my favorite comics in a small little bar.
Yeah.
And great crowd in there. And, he put on a hell of a show. Actually, one of the favorite part of the show, he's up there, he's doing something. He's, looking out the curtain. The stage is, right there by the window in the front door. And he's, looking out the curtain, and he's, doing some kind of, bit. And then he... Then he like goes out the door, and he didn't realize it was locked behind him. and he got locked up. And instead of like breaking character for the whatever the scene he was portraying,
right?
He marched up the sidewalk and comes in the back door and right up back through the crowd and like just stayed in character the whole time, screaming about something.
That's so funny.
And there's like, you know, of course, all the people on the sidewalk are looking at him like he's a madman.
Oh,
like,
right.
You know, what, they have no idea what's going on.
That's so funny.
I was losing it, though. It was so funny. Such a great moment. And then I saw him, you know, maybe whatever, 6 months later or something, he came back to town and he played the Funny Bone.
Uh-huh.
And did a completely different hour in a club compared uh-huh. to what he did in a you know, alt room bar right. show. But you know, it's just like you don't get a lot of that, you know. There was, if it was a club, there was no way he'd be able to walk out the door and that,
sure.
that kind of, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, it's just a totally different show because of the surroundings and everything else and the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the audience and everything else. But
if you can get the I think from a starting place in a comedy club, I think unless you've built an audience that has an expectation of what you are as a comedian, but if they don't know who you are or what you do, you know, I think maybe you have to start at a place familiar, and then you can maybe get to a place where you walk outside
yeah.
at some point within the hour.
Sure.
I don't know if you can start at that. I saw a buddy of mine the other day do a show, you know. I mean, there's alt shows that feel like comedy club audiences,
yeah.
you know. And, like, he did something very, you know, he actually, like, he just kind of walked, the second he got on stage, he started walking into the audience, and he walked past the audience, and he walked through some weird broom closet in the back and then closed the door. And I was dying, you know. But the audience kind of, like, he had to kind of get them back a little bit. They were just, like, weirded out by it,
sure.
you know. And I think the two comics went before him. They did great, but it was very, like, kind of traditional comedy club stuff.
Yeah.
And it is weird. It's like you do something. But then conversely, if you do an alt show, you know, and just go right into, so I broke up with my girlfriend recently, and yeah. it feels like very... They get it's that's their equivalent of walking in the back of the room and being weirded out,
yeah.
you know. I also feel like that's a credit to Sean, I of being a versatile comedian.
Yeah,
I think a lot of I don't know. Sometimes I get this sense that like people think that if a comedian's one or the other, they can't make it work in either
oh,
one.
Right.
I feel like there's if there's like a, oh, he's a club guy.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna book him. He's a club guy. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, he's going to have a tighter set than anybody here. You know, it might not be the most groundbreaking set you've ever seen, but there's a good chance it'll be the funniest
yeah.
one of everybody, you know, more laughs per second. You know, sure, there's a lot of club guys that only work in clubs, a lot of alt guys that only work in alts, and it's on the comedian to figure out how to make it work in both.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I get a sense of like, well, alt guys can't do, you know, they can't figure out. Somebody said that to me once. There was like, you know, I'm based in New York, and this guy was, I can't remember what the situation was, but he was like, yeah, got all these alt guys in LA. I was like, I can't book any of them at the Vegas room because they don't know how to make it work in a club. And it's probably true for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stubborn comedians
right.
that refuse to adjust for their audience. But to say that guys, just because they are traditionally one or the other, can't, like, really, that there's these idiots that can't make it work, you know?
It seems like here in the Midwest, we've been getting, you know, especially here in St. Louis, obviously, but, like, we've been getting a lot more. You got your guys come through the Funny Bones, you got, you know, your club comics, but it seems like there's a growing attraction to the, you know, like I said, more of the alternative rooms, like
the Firebird.
Said. Yeah, Firebird and stuff. A lot of these places have been booking one nights and stuff, and I think those are, for a lot of people, are a little more enticing than doing a whole weekend at the Funny Bone sometimes. Or I don't know exactly how that works, but it just seems like, for scheduling purposes, I guess. But it's I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot of guys been, you know, in Firebird, and there's even like pageant. They do a lot of, you know,
sure. But I mean, that's, the Duck Room at Blueberry Hill.
Duck Room's been doing a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
And but yeah, just these one night, one off shows, and they're compared to, you know, eight shows at the Funny Bone or something. And
I think there's probably a lot of different factors for that. You know.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with the alt rooms is that you either have to, as far as being a touring comedian goes, you have to either be at a point where you're a draw to, you know, pack the audience yourself with your fans, or that the, and this is what's great about, you know, what's happening in a lot of cities like St. Louis across the country, you know, and Milwaukee and Des Moines, and, you know, all these cities that you never really thought of having a comedy scene, yeah, are now all have these great indie comedy scenes happening there, and that they're able to, you know, make have some sort of conglomerate, you know, bare knuckle comedy in St. Louis, or Beast Village in Des Moines, Underground Collaborative in Milwaukee, where they're able to sort of have, they're able to sort of build an audience, so a comedian can come through, and because they've built something up, there's an audience there for that comedian. Yeah. But it's hard to you know, build a more than one night of an audience to come out and see you. Yeah. You know, where a club is you can have, you know, you know the club is a comedy club, so they have people go there because it's a comedy club. Sure. And the average person knows that that's where to go to get to see comedy. But I think you go to, if you want to work a bunch of nights in a row, the club is more lucrative, unless you're at a point where you're more of a draw. Then you can do like a bunch of nights in a row. You just have to do them in different cities, because it's hard to have like build a week's worth of audience. Chappelle can do it.
Yeah.
You know, Chappelle can come through and sell out every single night for his own audience.
I think he did 8 shows at the pageant.
Did he really? That's insane.
In 4 nights.
So he doesn't need a comedy club. You know, because yeah, he also doesn't need to move from city to city. I think the one-nighter, it's so, like, you know, unless, you know, Chappelle could do it, but, like, even the average very well-known comedian, you know, that could probably just go to a town, go to, let's just say, a Firebird-type place, you know, and fill the entire room up with their audience. They can do it one night, and then they got to move to another city the next night, because it's hard to do it more than one night. But I think that's why guys like doing that more than the club, because the club is a week of people that are not necessarily there to see them, and you got to deal with all the, you know, you got to deal with check drop, you know, sure, you got to deal with club, you know, just some things that don't make comedy ideal.
Right.
That some comedy clubs sort of have happen. So it's more attractive for people to be like, I'd rather just go one night, you know, for an audience there to see me, so I can do comedy on my terms without dealing with check drop or telling them that I can or can't do this or that, and then move on to the next city the next night.
Yeah.
As opposed to be able to get to that point is more attractive to a lot of guys and girls that do comedy, and as opposed to just, you know, yeah, just like, just, you know, grinding out a week at a place that's just like, I smell like smoke at the end of the thing. And, yeah, you know, like, there's people were screaming at me because they were too drunk, but the club was afraid to kick them out because of this, or they were afraid to lose money. There's so many things in clubs I would love to change. And I hate whenever I talk about this, people will go, Nick, how do you, you've never ran a comedy club. What do you know? It's like, you know what? I've never like been a parent either,
yeah,
but I know that you shouldn't, you know, slap your kid and charge him for soda. Oh, you know, right, like there's certain things. I think one thing that clubs need to get rid of, you know, and these are the reasons that comics don't want to do, they'd rather not do clubs, and they'd rather do like these alternative rooms, you know. Yeah. Is like the because we were talking last night about the check drop thing. Is I think comedians have been attacking this for a long time,
right,
that they hate the check drop. You know, you've got in your set, you got to do your
got to do some tried and true at the top to kind of get them. You know, once you have them, then maybe you can kind of, you know, try some newer stuff out. But once you get into that third, if you're going to say like the your set is divided up into four quadrants, the first quadrant is getting them. Second quadrant, you can kind of play around with, but then third quadrant is where the, you know, towards the fourth is where the check drop happens. Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of places to kind of work on stuff or try stuff out. You know, you're sort of like, because you gotta, it's hard to work out stuff during that check drop, you know? So then you're sort of, and it's also just not ideal for comedy, you know? People are like talking, they're looking around each other. Not only are they distracted and not paying attention, but they're also a little bummed out. You ever eating and the waiter drops off your check in the middle of your meal? It's always a bummer.
Yeah.
It's sort of this is the coming where, like, just, you know, this is all. You know what? You know what? This is going to be over in a little bit. The check, you know what the check drop is? It's the club just whispering in everyone's ear, you're all going to die one day. This is all going to end. This is all going to end. All right? Right. Just so you know, this. Yeah, I know you're having fun right now, but this is going to end. So that's the, like, the subliminal thing that they're saying. Yeah. Comedy club owners don't care. They don't care. They're like, just be funny. Just get. Also, we already got their money. Who cares? You know? They don't care.
Yeah.
I think what we need to do as comedians, if we want this to change, is approach it from a business mindset. You know, like if I was on Shark Tank, I'd be like, sharks, this is what I'm going to pitch to you. It's, you will make more money if you get rid of check drop for these simple reasons. First and foremost, and I think this is the only reason. This is the only reason you really need to give them. They'll sell more drinks. They'll sell more drinks if you don't, you know, if a waiter just was like halfway through your lunch, be like, you can't order more drinks. He's not going to sell as many drinks yeah. as he could if he sold them the whole time they're eating. It's simple, you know. You will sell more drinks every show, every night throughout your year. You just make more money by not cutting them off needlessly, you know. I understand there's two shows a night, early show you need to turn the room. I understand. I completely understand a check drop on an early show. Yeah. I understand that. If you're a club, some clubs have said, you know, because I've talked about this with club owners, you know, and been like, well, you know, club owners also, there's clubs in this country that don't do check drop and yeah. it works perfectly fine for them. Skyline Comedy Club in Appleton, they don't do it. I go, why don't you do it? He goes, why should we? I was like, you're right. I got the idea to not do check drops from a club owner. That's where I just assumed that's what you had to do, because that's what everyone just assumes you should do it, you know, because that's how we've done it, right?
Sure.
So if you're a some clubs use the check drop, say it's a showcase show, like New York, they'll have like nine comics on a show. They use the check drop spot to give a comic that they wouldn't normally book an opportunity to showcase, you know. So it's the spot that no comic wants, so they give it to a new guy who's got a trying to, you know, he's got a, he comes in and he comes in gun blazing trying to cut his teeth, you know. And I do think if you, like, you know, it's like putting a weight on the bat in on deck circle, you know. If you can make an audience laugh during check drop, then you really, you know, then you can, they'll start working in the club. So I understand it gives young comics an opportunity. I understand that. Early show and there's a late show, got to turn the room. I understand that. A third factor that I don't know about, I'm open to, you know, I understand. I don't, your specific club might have a certain thing. You have to be out of, I don't know. The yeah. parking lot shuts down at a certain time. You need them out of there. I don't know. I understand there's an extra thing. So there's one club where there's a staff. The staff, if they work more than like a certain amount of hours without a break, then they have to take a break at the end of their shift.
Yeah.
I saw this one time at a club where they all just sat there for 15 minutes. I was like, why are they all sitting here? Why don't they go home? He's like, because the comic went long and now they hit their hour mark where they have to have the mandatory break. So they can't go home for 15 minutes because they have to have the mandatory break that they couldn't take in the middle of a show, because you can't just take a break in the middle of a show as yeah. a waiter. But you'll sell more drinks, and also the show will be better, so people will come back, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. I do find that stuff interesting because I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I do have a dream to someday have a venue of sorts doing music and comedy and stuff. Essentially, I would love to start creating a live version of what I do with the podcast. Create a spot to showcase a lot of the talent, the same talent that's been on the show and stuff like
that. That'd be great.
So Someday, I don't know. I obviously need a lot of money. So,
viewers, send in your money.
Yeah.
to makeithappen.com.
Yeah.
And that'd be, and then see, you would be a great guy to run. Comic ran shows are always like the best shows.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm no comic, but I big fan.
Or artist ran shows. Yeah. You know, or you know, are fans of like sure. like you know, they're genuine fans. I, yeah. There's so many people that run comedy clubs that I don't think like comedy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're doing it. You know, if a comic is just sort of over being a comedian, they need to stop being a comedian. And if you're over being a comedy club owner,
yeah.
I mean, it's easy for me to say when someone's like, well, I'm not going to get a new job now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I know, I guess. But you just, I mean, you hate, you know, if you were going to do a doctor and like your doctor just hated being a doctor and you're like, sure. What's wrong with me? It's like, I don't know. You're fat. You're stupid. You eat like an asshole. You know, you'd be like, well, don't be a doctor. I'm not gonna not be a doctor. I've already put, yeah, I know. But you're still a shitty doctor, and you're gonna lose patients, and you're not gonna make as much money. It's gonna make you more miserable. And yeah. So if you're a club owner and you hate what you're doing, you're mean to all the comics. Once club owners start being mean to comics, I hate it. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, you
is that enough of a tangent?
Oh, sure.
Should I bitch more? I want change. I want to invoke good change for everybody so that comics have a better time, so club owners make more money, and everyone's more happy, and the audiences are more happy. Is there anything wrong with bitching about something that could facilitate that? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, this podcast is listened to by many, many club owners, so maybe the change will happen.
Oh, great.
I made that part up.
Yeah, I know. I just got blackballed from every comedy club.
It'd be funny if this is the, you know, podcast that gets traction where, yeah, people are start. Nick Vetterot said on Rocktober Podcast.
Right.
You know, it's like,
business plan. Yeah. Sell more drinks. Yeah. Make more money.
I don't know. You were back. We did one about a year, almost exactly a year ago, while you were in town, and that was episode 37. And we sort of touched on some of your stuff from being on Fallon and Conan, and your album came out
for amusement only. Yeah. Still out there. You can still buy it.
Now available on iTunes
before Disney puts it back in the vault.
Yeah.
It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify now. It's on every like streaming network for amusement only. I'm sure you can pirate it. I wouldn't recommend it. Why is it pirate it? Just get on Spotify. It doesn't cost you anything. You know.
Is there still only digital, or are there any plans to
still only digital?
Yeah.
It is funny. I do get Google updates of pirate websites that have my album on there, because you get a Google alert. You're like, ooh. Yeah. Oh, someone's talking about me.
Yeah.
And then you look up like, oh, just someone pirating my... But yeah, still in digital form.
Yeah. Be cool to do some kind of limited run or
I'd
something.
Love to make a vinyl of
yeah.
it. I would love to make a vinyl of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. And I know it's... I mean, I know the cost has come down, but it's still pretty expensive to do.
I would do it. It's a matter of coordinating with it's more involved than just me deciding to
sure.
do it. I have to convince other people involved in it that I want to do it.
But I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about some, because we didn't really dig too deep into your growing up here and stuff. And
my roots.
Yeah, your
my St. Louis roots.
Yeah.
Highway 44, past the FARC. I just farted. Go down the Ozarks. Got a pontoon down the Ozarks. Went down there for Memorial Day weekend. Party Cove.
I was going to ask, so what's your favorite St. Louis spot to eat at when you come to town?
Oh, it's Lion's Choice.
Lion's Choice.
Hands down. I love Lion's Choice so much. By the way, Lion's Choice, if you're listening, I promote you constantly. It's at a point now where when my parents pick me up from the airport, they just assume we're going to go by Lion's Choice. This is how much I love Lion's Choice. I had a connecting flight from Raleigh I was going. I was flying. I did a Dead Crow Comedy in Wilmington, North Carolina. Great club, amazing club. So I rag on clubs for the thing for I don't like the dance, but there's so many great clubs that do great things and run it great. And Dead Crow is an amazing club. And I was coming back from Dead Crow from I had to go to fly all the way. I drove from Wilmington. By the way, I drove from Wilmington to Raleigh. And it's a 2-lane highway because it was just cheaper to fly in and out of there. And I haven't driven in like a long time. And they got a two lane highway, and I was losing my mind. I was just sitting there. By the time my first show, I just sort of said to them, "I was guys, I just drove here from Raleigh, 2-lane highway. I got to tell you, I got to ask you something. The left lane is for passing, right? It is for passing. Because if I'm wrong, please let me know, and I'll stop screaming the whole time I'm driving. The whole time, there's just people, and just they're side by side. You can't get around them. Right. Two lanes, just and they're just like there was a tractor. There was a little tractor in the left-hand lane, and he wouldn't let me pass. And he's just like, "Mr. Good Old Boys, get a new no dump, ding, 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 ding." And say, "Move your car, get out the tractor, get go in the farm or wherever tractors are supposed to be, but definitely don't be in the left lane." I was losing. I almost missed the show because I kept getting stuck behind all these people. Yeah. So that's sorry. My two left lanes for passing. Can we just spread the word about that? But when I flew back, I had a connection in St. Louis. I had a 3-hour connection in St. Louis, and I don't think I realized that I was connecting in St. Louis till when I booked the flight and everything. And I'm flying back, and I get to the airport, and I was like, "Oh, I have a connection in St. Louis. Oh, it's a 3-hour layover." And I called my parents, and they came. I go, "Hey, I'm going to land in St. Louis. I'll be there for 3 hours." And I landed in St. Louis. Walked outside, they picked me up, we went to Lion's Choice, and then drove right back to the airport and went back. So I literally ran off the airport, went to Lion's Choice, and flew back because I love it so much. Also, I love my parents too.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, parents and Lion's Choice, they're both up there.
I didn't realize so there's none up east at all, or
what's it?
Lion's Choice. There's nothing up towards New York or
anything? It's St. Louis. That's it. Really? I've never seen it anywhere outside St. Louis. I think it's a purely St. Louis thing. You know what? If I could franchise it, I'd put it somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd buy stock in that.
I don't know. I thought I always never really looked into it, but I didn't realize it was as regional as it.
Heck yeah. It's roast beef done right. It's the salt. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's roast beef. I mean, Arby's, you can't even. Arby's compared to, like, that's not even the same animal.
Right.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But yeah, that's hands down. I like Emo's. I like toasted ravioli. I like all that stuff. But yeah, Lion's Choice is sort of my big St. Louis thing I love.
Yeah. And you didn't start comedy here, though. You say you started in Chicago or something?
Chicago. First time I did it was Columbia, Missouri.
Okay.
When I did the comedy contest at Deja Vu, and I did helped start an improv group at University of Missouri. Wrote a humor column for the Man Eater, my humble opinion. Those three things were my favorite things in college. Yeah. I was bombing college. You know, I was just, you know, failing out left and right. I'd sign up for class. I'd have to, you know, I failed. I couldn't pick a major either. I failed. There's a class you can take. It's called Majors of the University, and where each week someone from a different major comes and tells you about that major. I failed that class. That shows how bad I was doing up there. But my favorite things that I was doing was the improv group every week. There was even a point where, like, I was on academic probation for University of Missouri, but I was still doing the campus improv group every week. And doing that combined with writing the humor column for the newspaper, and trying the stand-up contest would be like once a year, and yeah. You know, I'd go up once and then lose or whatever. But really the column and the improv were like my favorite things that I was doing. Those are the only things I cared about, you know. And so those were, I always say, college is where you go to figure out what you want to do with your life. And I sort of did do that for me. sure. You know, not the traditional way. I was more so by showing me what I didn't want to do. And those were my favorite things. So then Second City came through Columbia one time and we went and watched them. I was like, wait, the guys that do this thing that I do every week, they get paid to tour around to do it? No way. Yeah. I got to at least give it a whirl to see if I could. I got to at least try to see if I can be one of those guys. So that's it. So then I went to Chicago. And that's where I was like, yeah, doing improv sketch and stand-up as much as I could.
I kind of had a very similar thing. I went to the community college for a little bit, you know, for my 13th year of high school, pretty much. You know,
yeah.
That kind of vibe. Like, I really didn't know what I was doing, but I went there and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And school was never my strong suit at all. And,
right.
And it was just that's a similar kind of thing. It was like, I always felt like I wanted to teach, and I don't know, just never quite took off like I thought it would, was going to and stuff. And it was just like, man, this is not for me. But I started going to a lot more concerts and everything else, and I was like, I love this. Can I somehow get paid to just go to concerts and, and talk music and do, you know, haven't quite figured that out yet, but I'm getting closer and closer.
So I think this is you have to do. Something you're passionate about, you know?
For sure.
You teach the whole time. There's people passionate about teaching, you know? Yeah. And, you know, but if you're teaching in the back of your mind, because you don't want to be the bad comedy club owner of teachers. Yeah, you know, you don't want to be that teacher that's over teaching and hates teaching, and then you should just get out. And you're like, well, why should I get out? Because this is what I decided to do.
Yeah.
You got to try it.
Sure. What's your favorite St. Louis joke to tell here in town that you can't tell anywhere else? Because
the Vaterot joke. People say Vaterot. People say Vaterot. What kind of name is that? I was like, it's actually a German for technical college. Yeah. That's a big St. Louis joke. Yeah. The other St. Louis joke. I will say though that my other St. Louis joke is that I've finally been able to figure out how to make work outside of St. Louis. That did take a long time, but it was. It's about the eye patch lawyer.
No, oh, okay, yeah.
And it's sort of. I don't think it'll. It won't really play on the. Yeah. On the audio so much, but it's just the guy because it kills me because the commercials he turns his head. You know, I tell people it's like, you know, like, because he does those local commercials, you know, right. And I always love when like lawyers on those commercials, they turn their head and, you know, kind of say, well, he's also a personal injury attorney, which is amazing.
Sure.
Like, that's the best part of the guy, you know, I love it. And then he's like, have you ever been hurt in an accident? And he turns and said, I sure have. Which it is fun. I finally figured out a way to make that work in other cities, but it does not. The reaction gets in other cities will always pale in comparison to people in St. Louis that just are like,
sure.
And my family is like, they saw him out somewhere and took a picture of him and sent it to me and stuff. Apparently, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah,
a couple people said they've met him and he's like got a real good sense of humor and. But that's those two are my two favorite St. Louis jokes.
There's I don't know if you've been able to keep up, but. STL Uplate here in town now. You know, they've been growing and growing. Now they're on TV. They get a late night spot on Channel 4.
That's awesome.
I think it's like, I don't know, is that My TV, some kind of thing on Channel 4. But anyway, they run the whole show on YouTube.
Okay, I've definitely seen it.
Yeah. And they... they recently did a bit where it was like a boardroom meeting of all these superheroes from St. Louis. So it was that guy with the eye patch lawyer.
There was
Becky Queen of Carpets.
Ah.
There was the Brooks, Carol House Furniture.
Because you like nice things.
Yeah, the brother and sister, they were there.
That's so funny.
And... and it was kind of like a Scooby-Doo kind of thing, like where like that kind of or a similar type of feel, like at the kind of a voiceover kind of, and they were chasing the bad guy, and then, like, you know, stay tuned next week, kids, to find out what happened, you know, and that kind of thing. So,
and so I got to check that out.
Yeah, it was a pretty good bit, and it made me laugh really hard, the fact that, like, all, you know, obviously that does not translate to other cities nearly.
Oh, yeah.
But anybody that's grown up here in St. Louis watching local TV.
I wonder if our, I don't know, yeah, you have such a warped sense. It's interesting going to other cities and, like, you know, you're in a hotel on the road and you watch at 3 a.m, you watch what their bad commercials are, or watch what commercials are. I was in Virginia and this killed me, but a commercial was like, there's a car driving down a highway, and then a guy, you know, and then he's like, have you ever been hurt in an accident? And then, like, the guy, you know, is green screened in front of the traffic thing. He's like, if you've been hurt in an accident, call me. And so, like, so while he's on the screen and the car driving is happening behind him, he's talking. But while he's talking, the car behind him, like, it takes some weird turn and then it flips like a couple dozen times, it seems like. And then there's horrible carnage is happening while this guy's just, like, calmly, like, telling. It's the most morbid commercial I'd ever seen, and he doesn't address what's happening behind him. I mean, it killed me. It's hilarious. I do think those little commercials have supplied a lot of fodder for local, you know, comedy groups and stuff. But I do think, I don't know, I think St. Louis has some of the most ridiculous local commercials. I think they have. I'm sure a lot of people think that their city does. But I don't know. I lived in Chicago for a long time, and they got some ridiculous ones up there. But St. Louis, you know, like the Rodney D. Young commercials, and which are funny. I don't know why insurance commercials always decided to be funny. That's so weird to me, because insurance is, like, the most, like, non-fun thing to deal with. You know, like, financial companies aren't doing humor ones, but, like, insurance is. But, St. Louis always had, like, Don Brown. Hi, I'm Don Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Or George Weber. Hi. Yeah. I'm George Weber. Weber Shepherd. You'll never want to buy George Weber. I'm sure Weber grew one time. I love George Weber.
Yeah, there's one time I did, like, a mashup of all the, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, hi, George Weber here telling you about, you know, and then it's like, don't close the deal till sunset, you know, or something like that. You do, like, you just put all those Scooby car
cars
all together, and it's like, and just really mess with people.
Like, where do I go? Which one do I look for? Yeah. All those commercials are amazing. Yeah. Don Brown, there's nothing more Christmas than Don Brown's jacket.
Yeah.
I'm Don Brown. KSDK, too, I think they finally got rid of it, but every Christmas they would have that, like, Old Man Winter come to town. It was like a 5-minute commercial, and it's just them, like, kind of, it's poorly shot and it lit terribly, and they're out in the snow. But it killed me. It wasn't a great commercial, and they had it on every year for, like, a decade at least, you know?
Right.
It's like, come on, guys, shoot a new commercial. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, man, we're at the hour mark.
Holy shnikey.
Yeah.
Went by fast.
Yeah. Time flies when you're
making fun of local commercials.
Yeah. But yeah, this has been a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you taking some time out again to do the show
Do you have one more St. Louis? Is there another St. Louis commercial that you want me to answer real quick?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm so long winded we never get to anything.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Oh, it's perfectly fine. That's the fun of podcasting, though, man. It's like, it doesn't really have to be anything.
It's
like,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
So people ask me about my show, and it's just like, they're all very, very different. You know, just some are funny, some are more serious, some we play songs, some we don't, you know, it's like,
right.
So it's hard to tell you what the show's like, you know, but there is no rules. That's what I love about
the only rule is that no matter what it is, it's something you can make love to.
Yeah, that's the truth right there.
If anyone made love to this podcast, way to go, you stallion. A whole hour. Wow. Yeah, hope we helped.
That Trump talk just really got me going.
You thigh, you mutants. I do want to put Donald Trump in the next X-Men.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to get rid of the mutants. Oh, you're fired. I do the worst Trump impression of all time.
That sounds
You fired.
That's like more like a Woody Allen.
If Trump talked like Woody Allen, I'd vote for him.
Yeah. All right, well, pick up Nick's album, For Amusement Only.
For Amusement Only, check out The Nick Vatterott Show, the podcast, where each week Nick Vatterott is not there.
Yeah.
And he takes over someone else takes over the podcast. It's really me. It's a character. And that's it. Oh, Helium. I'll be at Helium, you know, sometime, hopefully at some point. We were supposed to do Christmas weekend, but the... I don't know. I don't know if I should get into it or not.
Yeah.
The Galleria dropped the ball. They didn't do their paperwork right. Which was a huge bummer. But hopefully the Helium date will happen in this next year sooner than later. So come on out for that.
Yeah. And follow Nick Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for all his stuff. And I was going to ask you, you do characters between your podcast and even some quick things on Instagram.
You're not. You're fired.
But do you have a favorite character that you enjoy doing? Or
So I don't know if this, for the past 3 days, I've been torturing my family with this character. And all it is this. Well, there goes the neighborhood. It's not funny. I know it's not funny. Every time I say it, it's not funny. But, like, I want it to be so funny at some point. I don't know. For some reason, that character's been making me... It makes me laugh every time. I don't know what it is. It's some character, like... It's the character who always, like, here's what I can't decide about the character. It's either a character that, a very, like, benign thing happens, you know?
Yeah.
A car backs into a mailbox and the mailbox falls over and they're outside smoking in their bathrobe and they're like, huh, well, there goes the neighborhood. or a terrible thing happens, you know, like they're outside smoking in their bathrobe and then a nuclear bomb lands and destroys the entire neighborhood and they look at all the smoldering and they go, huh, well, there goes the neighborhood. And it becomes more obnoxious every time I do it too. Because we'll be, you know, on Christmas, somebody bumped into a table and the glass fell over. I was like, oh, well, there goes the neighborhood. And I don't know why it makes me laugh, because it is. I think my family's about to kick me out of the house because I won't stop doing it. But I want it. But I did. I was like, and I told. I actually said to them yesterday. I was like, guys, I understand this character's not funny. I understand. I don't know why I keep doing it. But I'm just hoping at some point it will be funny when I say it. And then there was a flash flood warning yesterday, and there was a lot of flooding yesterday. It was raining so crazy, and there was a flash flood, and the creek down by me started to rise up, and you know, it was getting on the road and stuff. And I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe the flood comes up, and we'll be on top of our roof, and the entire subdivision will be flooded, and then I'll be like, wow, there goes the neighborhood, and and then it'll. And I go, with then will it be funny? But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that. I guess that's my favorite character of the past couple days.
Yeah. I do. Think there's something like to that. Like, Matt Bronger like was talking about how kind of touched on a little bit how he thinks as a comic and how like. He was listening to Billy Joel or whatever, and he gets like that song stuff. And then it gets shortened down to just like one clip, and it gets played over and over in his head on repeat. And it's
that's
just
funny.
Like, that one, and then he's like, and then he said it ends up like in his brain, it like he ends up like turning into like a techno song or something like that, and like
right.
or something kind of thing. And but just kind of you know, you doing There Goes the Neighborhood, that's like your tick right now. Like that's
my character doesn't have, he doesn't say anything else.
Right.
I don't even know if it's a he. I don't know if it's a he or it's a she. I think it's a woman. I think it's like a woman with her hair up in rollers, smoking in a bathroom.
I imagine like a kind of a like a Debbie Downer type of kind of a
thing, right.
You know, that kind of vibe, like a
right.
Just everything is the worst thing ever, you know.
So, right. Yeah. So that's what I can't decide what's funnier, if the neighborhood really yeah. does go yeah. or if it's just the most like, you know, like she's such a Debbie Downer yeah. that like just nothing, like she like her like neighbors didn't mow the grass for a sure. day. And they just think that's the end of the world. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I've been wanting, and you're talking about clubs, because I've been so obsessed with just a person who says that, I do want to go online and I want to put together a montage of all the times somebody says that in a movie or a TV show.
Right.
Because I think that'll make me happy.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I do it, I probably won't do it.
Yeah.
But you know what I will do? I will go online and try to see how many times I can find somebody.
Yeah. I love Conan when they cut like all the news anchors saying the exact same line.
Oh, it's amazing.
That is one of
I don't know who figured that out,
yeah.
But that's so crazy. That's also an interesting thing too. Like I remember like being in St. Louis, and you know what Channel 5 is like the bung bung, like the church bell type things. Yeah. I don't know if they still do it, but like there was like the
NBC thing, right?
There was a local one though that was just for KSDK, and it had like the graphics. It's sort of like these, I don't know. But I remember moving into Chicago. It was the music that would play before the local 5 o'clock news.
Yeah.
And then I remember moving to Chicago, and their KSDK local affiliate played the same exact music. And that was like a first time I was like, oh, we just use the same music that and they use the similar graphics too on the local KSDK or yeah. local NBC affiliate. Yeah. So it would be the local NBC here and the local NBC here has the same music going into their local and it was crazy. I was like, oh. And then I realized – and then I was travel around and I saw that every
yeah. –
the local NBC affiliate all use the same music. It's weird realizing that because
yeah.
you realize that like, oh, we have a lot more in common than every other city
yeah.
in the United States. We all have these very similar shared experiences growing up. Of the local news was about the same in every
sure. –
the commercials were about the same. They were maybe a little crazier in some cities. But a lot of it – but then you find out like, oh – then there's this like this weird kind of disgusting part of it. They're like, oh, they're just feeding us the same stuff, making us feel like it's just for us. But like when you see them like – that music is the same in each city. Even the copy, that's what Conan exposed, yeah. the copy is the same.
Yeah.
You know, the same lame pun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, yeah, baby, Mike Myers yeah. is a child today. Or what? And yeah. then it's like, yeah, and they all, watching each person try to sell the same copy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're just all feeding us all the same thing, yeah. you know?
That's one of my favorite bits they do on there.
It's so good.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a lot of fun. Enjoy your lines choice.
I will always enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I hope this podcast doesn't get accidentally erased or deleted, because if it did, there's go to the neighborhood. I fairly forced it in that last one. Yeah.
That's it. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.